again, I didn't come to this program wanting God. I figured I was going to work my way around this and what really is working for you guys. And, you know, this relationship, this belief system, these ideas, these all got developed through this process and through living the process. Right? But the big thing here is, what does it take for me to be ready to turn to something that I have so much doubt about? Because just because you're a 6 and 7 doesn't believe you know how to believe in God. It doesn't necessarily mean you know what that means. It doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to do it. All I know right now at this point is what happens if there is no God. But see, that's enough to keep moving me forward through the process, right? Because that fire is right behind me, and I'm going to have to either jump or die, right? In case you didn't hear, I talked about a burning building with fire coming up behind me and firemen at the bottom saying, jump, jump, we'll catch you, right? And, the truth about what came behind me is what's pushing me forward still. And the importance of step 7 here is that this is about starting to develop a new relationship, right, with a power that will work in your life. Again, I don't know what that means. I don't know how to believe. I still have so much doubt. What really helped me a lot was a friend gave me her definition of faith, in referring to faith in God. She said, faith is belief with doubt. Belief with doubt. And hearing that, it just kind of like, it just made the whole thing seem a lot easier, because it's like, okay, it's okay that I question it. And it's good to question it. And it is good to question it. Even at this point, question it. Right? Because isn't that what you've always wanted, is proof? Proof without a doubt? I mean, if God is so wonderful, there should be proof, right? Right? Well, we'll get to that. Right? Because when I'm completely ready, looking at all of these things from my past, we're not going to be working on past behavior now. Right? Making a list of all these defects of character that I'm going to work on now, that's stuff I've already done. There's nothing to work on. You know, what we're looking at now is staying out of that stuff in the future. Right? Not working on past behavior, I'm working on living on a new basis of life. A basis of life including a reliance on a power greater than myself. And that makes sense. I mean, a lot of people think that this is more about 10 and 11 when you start talking about this stuff with God. If that was true, if it wasn't, if why didn't they put 8 and 9 after 10 and 11? Right? Because 8 and 9... you're going to need God, right, to make amends to them all, right? But they put 6 and 7 before 8 and 9, because there are some things that we have to see, and it starts with this simple commitment to this relationship. And what does a commitment to a relationship mean? Right. Well, what I heard in the program was, well, when you get out of bed, roll off onto your knees and thank, thank God for your life and go about your day. Come back at home and just lay down in bed and thank God for keeping you sober and go to sleep. Try that with your spouse. What kind of relationship would you have with a boyfriend or girlfriend or husband and wife where you got up in the morning, kissed her good morning and say, hello, dear, love you, going about your day completely not thinking about her until you got home at night and went into bed and kissed her goodnight? Would you feel like it was hard to have a relationship with that person? Even though it was you getting up and leaving, you wouldn't feel like you had a relationship. That's the way most people pray. get up in the morning, they do what their sponsor tells them to do, they go to bed at night doing what their sponsor tells them to do and says, why don't I feel this thing? Right? It's because you're ignoring this relationship when you need it most. I don't need God when I'm sleeping. I need to access this power all through the day. When these situations come up in my life, I'm going to need a lot of power just to do what it says here in the ninth step, in 8 and 9. So, I don't say that morning and evening prayer is bad. No prayer is bad. I like to look at my prayer as an 18-hour prayer. I'm sorry, 16-hour prayer. My math was wrong there for a minute. 16-hour prayer. The other 8 hours, I'm sleeping. Right? Now, I'm not saying that I do this perfectly and that I do it all day. But that's my practice. And I try to be faithful to my practice and practice my practice. And that practice is practicing turning to God in all of my activities. Right? In all of my situations in life. Right? But that commitment starts with this prayer that says, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. Right? Not just the bad, but I turn to God even for the good stuff. And God, what do I need? What do I need to help this person that I'm taking through the steps? Right? Or what do I need need to pray for when things are bad happening in my life, but also for good things. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. It doesn't say that God's going to remove all your character defects. I mean, it could happen, but maybe after I've done it a couple more years, they'll all be gone. I don't know, but it hasn't happened for me yet. And besides, if a priest or something came walking through the door, and someone that you don't think ever has had a real relationship and doesn't cuss, doesn't drink, doesn't, you'd assume at least, right? And, who'd you feel more comfortable talking to? Someone like that or another drunk? Right? And we see how our character defects become of use in our life. Right, my imperfections and my experiences of falling short. Right, all of these things become the things that make me attractive to somebody else that's still suffering, because I can be identified as someone that probably understands, because I've had the same difficulties. Right, but I've also found a solution. So God uses most of my defects of character. Would you say your alcoholism could be a defect of character? Right? Maybe, right? Does God remove it? No. If God removed my alcoholism, then I wouldn't have to be here. And it's probably one of the biggest things in my life that becomes of real use in my life and in the life of others. It says, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. In order for me to do God's bidding, I have to contemplate and ask what that would be. Right? What would God have me be here? And I say that prayer a lot, right? In my interactions with the people around me. What would God have me be to this person in this situation? And it's through that practice of trying to bring that into my day and into all my interactions that I have the opportunity to start to see it actually work. Right? I need proof in order to really believe and in order to grow spiritually. The book says doesn't only say that we're supposed to maintain a spiritual way of life. It says somewhere around this fourth step, it talks about that what we're trying to get here is talks about having the growth and maintenance of a spiritual life. Right? I forgot the exact words in context. I'd have to find it, but it talks about the growth and maintenance of a spiritual life. Right? And what does growth look like? Right? What does spiritual growth look like? I mean, once you've been around here for a while, and one of the things that I noticed about myself, thinking that I was doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, I was noticing that really I was just maintaining what I had. And it wasn't because I wasn't doing the things that were causing growth. It was because I wasn't identifying where I was getting growth spiritually. Right? Turning to God sometimes is just about you being comfortable. Right? But how do I turn to God in a manner that shows me growth? Right? That's a question to bring into your practice. What would spiritual growth look like in this interaction? Right? Because when I start looking for spiritual growth, I start getting it. Right? It's so easy to come in and to go to meetings and work the steps till the sponsor is satisfied and says you've graduated. Right? And hang around Alcoholics Anonymous so long that you think, okay, this is AA. This is everything there is to get. I've got it all. I've been here long enough. And you put this ceiling on this spiritual life, saying, this is all there is for me. This is all there is here. There's nothing more. Right? And that's why I continue to go through the process on a regular basis, sometimes alone and sometimes with a group. And sometimes, you know, sometimes when I do a workshop, I use a lot of my own examples and I contemplate a lot of the stuff on my own and take myself back, remembering why am I here. And when they write inventory, I write inventory. Right. One of the things that are fun, and not all groups will, some get too terrified, but what I like to propose is a group fifth step, right? Where everybody in the group listens to your fifth step, and you listen to theirs, and everybody listens to theirs. And that gets fun, and it gets really scary, right? And especially for me, because I don't want them to think I'm just like them. I want them to think I'm better because I'm leading the workshop. Right? But what it shows them is, I think, is a great example that the highest form we ever take here is human. And we still mess up. We still mess up. But the difference now is, now when I mess up, I turn to God. Right? And before, it just turned to more self, which didn't accomplish anything more than what I'd already gotten, usually made it worse. Right? How can I grow from here spiritually? How can I grow closer to God? Right? And start watching for those opportunities. And, you know, and that's really, for me, part of what we're going to talk about next for 8 and 9 is you hear people throw out the term accessing the power of God. You've heard that, right? Or directing and using that power, right? We're going to talk a little bit about that in the next session, along when we're talking about 8 and 9, accessing the power of God and directing and using that power. All right, so let's take a break till 2:45. Okay, thank you. One here. All right, thank you. Welcome back. All right, so so I talked a little bit just before the last session about the idea that just because we've done 6 and 7 doesn't necessarily mean we know really how to have this relationship with God or how to do this thing. We've made this commitment to a relationship, and I talked a little bit about how that about how relationships are supposed to look, right? But now they've put 6 and 7 in a place that's set up just before something that's going to be pretty scary to do, right? Because we've got steps 8 and 9. And 8 and 9 made a list of the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
All, not some?
All.
I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. Clarity.
And some people say, well, some amends you can't make. All right. That should never be an excuse. Fear should never be an excuse to not make them. It says we became willing to make amends to them all. Right. And we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I am not others. Right. Just because it's going to hurt me, it's not an excuse to not do an amends. So you've heard all of that stuff about the ninth step. You hear people say you can't finish your ninth step. You can't make amends to everybody. Plenty of people will say you can never finish amends. All right? You know what that tells me? They didn't. That they didn't. Because if you do, then you know you can. And you get the results of finishing and can't, in good conscience, not be excited about that and spread that to others and say, you got to finish. Right? You know, a lot of the amends were fairly easy. I was told to just go through the inventory and make a list of all the harms that I saw and consider anything that wasn't in my inventory that I needed to write. And I was told to put it on a index card, like a 3x5 card. That's right, we're getting further and further away from people using index cards, aren't we? But there was a reason for that, because we put one name on each card, and so that you could flip through the stack, as opposed to just going down the list and crossing them out. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And 76, it says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. All right? So that's why I included the discussion on harms in the fifth step. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Right? Remember, it was agreed in the beginning that we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. If you get to the ninth step and you're not willing to make amends to them all, right, then problem is probably not the ninth step. Maybe the problem's in the eighth step. Never really became willing to make amends to that person. If that's true, then the problem probably isn't even in the eighth step, right? Maybe the problem's in the seventh step, where we never really committed to turn to God for help with everything. That there were still things we're not willing to turn to God for help with. If that's true, then maybe the problem isn't even the seventh step. Maybe the problem is the sixth step, that we never saw the objectionable nature of our behavior and how all of that was a result of no reliance on God. right? A failure of self-reliance, right? And maybe there was things that I'm still clinging to and ideas that I had that I still could run the show myself. If that's true, then maybe what I got out of the fourth step wasn't quite enough for me to see those, that I couldn't do that. And if the inventory wasn't honestly and humbly made, then maybe the reason is because the third step prayer wasn't. I'm sorry, maybe the third step prayer wasn't honestly and humbly made, and that's why I couldn't write an inventory sufficient enough for me to have the right attitude towards the inventory that I did write. And I never really committed to turn to God for help with my self-will, right? Again, the problem is probably not the third step, and it always goes back to step one, right? If I didn't see in step one that I could drink again, then none of this matters, right? But that's why I said in the beginning that an experience of step one has to be that there's nothing stopping me from drinking again. That's what being an alcoholic is. So, we spend a lot more time in 8 than we do in 9. Right? And 8, in fact, I tell the people I work with that they're not in 9, they should say that they're in 8. And it's an ego thing because they want to say they're in 9. They actually want to say they're in 10 and 11 because I give them stuff to do in 10 and 11. But if they're in front of me, they have to say they're in step 8. I'm sure they don't everywhere. Right. Another manipulation. It works. Manipulation can work sometimes because I know that their egos are driving them because now they want to finish because they want to be able to say they're in 10 and 11. So God still uses my character defects. Right. And it's 8. And then you understand and look at what is 8. 8 is becoming willing and becoming willing to make amends to them all can be really scary. Certainly there was some that I could do right away. Again, I have these cards. I've made this list made this stack of index cards with all of my amends, one on each card, put the name of the person, the cause of the resentment, and contact information if I have it, or the word find. Right? And typically what I do with that is I sit with the people I'm working with and we go through the cards and discuss it again. Hopefully we've discussed enough of it in the four steps so that they've already, a lot of some of the cards that don't have to be there aren't there. And other cards that we've already decided that they should definitely make, it's already written down there that they see that they're supposed to make these. But we go through each card again just to look at what that would look like and if there's any ones that I call them goofy amends. Goofy amends. The ones that you go and make amends to someone and they're just thinking, that Alcoholics Anonymous thing is really weird. You know? If you've harmed somebody, they're not thinking you're weird by coming to them necessarily. You know, they're impressed sometimes or just sometimes pissed off. Right? But it's those goofy amends, the ones that are just kind of silly. And we talk about it. And I don't necessarily tell them which ones not to make. We have a stack called Pray About It, right? And that puts the responsibility back on them because they know as we're going through these what is important and they get the idea of it, they get the feel of it. And, you know, and then there's the ones that they should be able to make, but to go to that person would cause way more pain in their life than leaving them alone, right? Except when to do some so would harm them or others, right? Some things that people have done to others, you just got to leave them alone, right? Just stay. Just, they probably forgot about you by now. You know. Again, we discuss it. You know, we talk about it and see if they have resistance to it. I look for what is the resistance to it, because fear isn't a reason to not do it. Just because you're afraid isn't, yeah. You know, fear makes it more important to do it. All right, and I'll get into that in a minute. Do we go through this and hopefully we have a stack of cards that are definite amends that need to be made? And what I have them do is sit with the cards and pray and ask God to show them what the first amends that they need to make would be. And they go through the cards and read every card, and the next amends will just stand out. You'll see the first indicated amends when you're going through these cards. This is the one I'm willing to do. Start with the one you're willing to do. Don't worry about the ones you're not willing to do. Start with the one you're willing to do. Right? If you got it on a list and you're going down the list and you hit the one you're not willing to do, you don't go farther down the list. Right? I'm sure some people do. I'm just saying this is what was shown to me, and it worked really well. And having it in such a way that it doesn't hold a particular sequence, you start with the ones you're willing to do, and you build this spiritual muscle. Right? The first ones that you do, you might not need to pray into. I suggest they do it, right? But there might not be a lot of need for it, because they're just kind of like busy amends, you know, just do it, you know. But generally happens, right? They start to slow down as they go through the list. Because as you're going through the cards, you know, and you've gone through all the easy ones, and now they're getting a little harder. It's kind of like going to the gym. You know, you start over here at the light dumbbells, and you're looking at all the guys over here wishing that you could get over there already, but you know, you start over here and you build up to that. You know, and this kind of works the same way. I do the ones I can and that I'm willing to do and get them out of the way. Right? And you get further and further down this list until you've got the ones that start to get a little painful, that start to get a little scary. Right? And by this time, if you're in a group that says you don't have to finish amends, then you'll probably stop about this point. Right? My experience was, as I said, you couldn't even share at my group until you finished amends. And there was a lot of people there that finished amends, and they had something. There was something about them that I wanted. And I trusted they said that I need to do this, and I had no reason to doubt what they were telling me. And what I found is that as I got down that list, I started to have to pray into them, into the amends. Right? Again, not such a big deal. You know, you pray, you do the thing, and you ask God to remove the fear and direct your attention to who He would have you be, and you just keep knocking away at that stack. I had 50 harms. I had a stack of 50 cards that I had to make amends for, and I get down to the last, I'd say, 6 or 7, and it really stalled at that point. Because I get down to the ones that are so scary, some of them I didn't even tell my sponsor about because I didn't want him to know that I wasn't planning to make them. The fact is the Dan that started the ninth step isn't the Dan that got to the other end of this ninth step, right? And the idea of understanding that place, that kind of limbo of the eighth step where I've heard people talk about praying for the willingness to be willing, to be willing, to be willing, right? Right? And it's like, I don't necessarily like it when I hear people say that they're praying for the willingness to do it. I prefer to stress the option is, what if you don't finish? Right? What is the experience you're not going to get? You know, what are you going to lose from not completing this? Right? Right? Because the fact is that some of them, for me, were personally scary and for various reasons. You know, I mean, for example, my first wife. I mean, 105 pounds. You know, you'd think, how scary could she be? Right? But that was the one that had me with my head on the steering wheel, like, talking to myself, saying, I'm taking this AA thing way too far. I'm still not actually in the ninth step yet. You know, it took a lot to just get me there. I mean, I had to sit and pray. I went through the stack. Her name was the card that came up. And I had to pray into making the appointment, setting the appointment. Now, again, I said I don't like just stopping with saying I'm praying for the willingness to be willing. Right? There's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do that. Yes, it says we're praying for the willingness to do it. But you know how when you go to different spiritual paths, they have different ways of approaching a posture, how you pray. You know, some paths will have you hold your thumb to your first finger or the second finger or together, or different spiritual paths have different methods of prayer, right? Different postures for prayer. Well, there's an 8-step prayer posture, okay? Sitting on a chair in front of a desk or table, feet flat on the floor, right? Stack of cards in front of you. The next indicated card on top, right? You get ready to pray, but before you start, you pick up the phone and you dial. Then you pray. Right? Praying for willingness a week before or the morning before is not going to help you. Right? God will not give me the power to do something when I don't need it. It will not be any less scary thinking a lot about it. In fact, it makes it worse. I know from experience that you can sit in fear over making these amends for months and years. Right? You're actually better off to not think so much about it. You've already decided you want to make the amends. Right? You pick up the phone, you dial the number, and then you pray your behind off. Right? Because you're only going to set an appointment. You're not going to really talk about anything yet. You're just going to kind of let them know what you're going to do here and that you want to meet with them. So I set that appointment and I'm sitting in my car still praying, thinking, you know, I've still got time to drive away. But I know she's already expecting me, so I'm kind of like committed. Right? And I'm walking up to the door, and there's a point where the 8-step turns into the 9-step, and there's a sound that it makes when that happens. Right? It sounds like this. Okay, now you're in the 9th step. Because now the door opens, and it's like, you know, as scary as some of these amends could be, it's like the experience of seeing that you hit a wall with your own abilities, where you look at something that you absolutely are terrified of doing and you would rather not be there. And if you could think of any good reason to not be there, you would have took it. But The fact is that there's better reasons to be there than to not be there. And to go to somebody, not with an apology, right? They've heard enough apologies. Apology is just something you utter that clears the air for some reason, and it doesn't admit any responsibility, right? It just kind of makes you feel more comfortable, like you've done something, a gesture, right? But it doesn't mend anything. Right? It hasn't mended anything. Right? An amend is a sincere desire to set right the wrongs that we've done in the past in the hopes to fix something, right? To fix something that we've done, right? And there's different ways that things get fixed, right? Emotionally, spiritually, physically, right? I mean, I put my ex-wife through a lot. She had her set of dreams and aspirations of what marriage would be like, but I guess she saw all the fairy tales, right? And the funny thing about fairy tales, they don't go on usually after the two initially get together. You don't hear what happens afterwards. Did you ever notice that about fairy tales?
Yes.
I mean, what happened to Cinderella after they rode back to the palace? I don't know. Anyway, I got off track, didn't I? Anyway, not really, because I mean, she had her ideas, her fairy tales, right? She didn't plan for me, and. I approach all my amends along certain lines. If they don't know I'm in the program, do they need to know? Not always. Because sometimes to say I'm here to save myself does not sound very sincere, right? I mean, now you've caused all this problem, you've hurt them, they might be still sore from what you've done, and now you're saying, I'm an alcoholic and I'm here to fix myself, right? And so you have to be sensitive and pray into each situation and be mindful of the other person's reactions to what you're going to do. And I approach them either, I start off with, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't, sometimes they don't need to. But what I follow that with is that I've currently been looking at my behavior in the past, right? And I saw some stuff in my behavior that I saw has hurt you. And I ask permission if it's okay to talk about that with them. So this is why I'm here. If they say it's okay, I tell them why I'm here. I lay out exactly what I'm aware of, the things that I felt hurt, that hurt her, Lori in this case. And then there's the next question, right? Because I'm not just there to fix myself, I'm here to repair the situation. And not to get back with her, or not to go, you know, it wasn't about that. But I have to give her an opportunity to say something. So the next thing I say is after I've told her everything that I'm aware of, I ask, did I miss anything? Is there something that you need to tell me that I'm not aware of, how I've hurt you or your family? And then I have to sit back and shut up. Let her say what she needs to say to me, right? And sit, and sit, and sit. She had a lot to say to me. But then she started repeating herself, and that's a good sign when they start repeating themselves, because it means they can't think of anything else. And it's a better sign when they notice that they can't think of anything else. Right? But what I saw was is that at the moment that she realized that she had told me everything she needed to say, there was a lightness about her. And I saw that she had got free of some things that she'd been sitting on for a long time. Right? But I don't stop there. I say, is there anything else? Right? Because the idea here is to give her the opportunity to say the things that she needs to say. To let me know how I affected her from her perspective. And I follow that up when she's done with, is there any way that I could possibly make amends for the harm that I've caused you? Right. And I sit quiet and I listen to see if there's anything she wants from me. I've heard people respond with things that have nothing to do with the situation, and sometimes you have to decide whether it's really appropriate. Is it really going to mend the situation? The situation is not about putting yourself in a situation where someone's going to be abusive to you. Right? At the same time, I just have to be careful how I respond and try to get in and out with as least extra damage as possible. And hopefully, so sometimes that means keeping your mouth shut. Right? I'm not going to argue with her perspective. She might have saw things that didn't happen. But her feelings are her feelings, and I can't argue those feelings. That's what she felt. Again, it has to be like a constant time of prayer when you're listening to someone tell you how you've behaved, what they don't like about you, or what they don't like about the what had happened. And as I said, the result of all of this, I think, in this situation was that she got free of some stuff that, and it made the whole thing worth it for me. It wasn't about me here. This was about her. Right? This was about, So I asked if there's anything I can do to set this right. In this particular, she had nothing that she wanted me to do. She just wanted to be able to say these things to me and for me to know how it affected her. And we actually still talk once every year or so. We don't have she's off doing her things, and I ended up going a different direction. And, so we don't have a relationship, but we're on speaking terms. She doesn't think bad of me now. And I'm sure there's a part of that that I can never really fix, though. Because, sure, we talked about her having her dreams and ideas of what she was going to get out of it. And she actually never ended up getting married again. I don't know if that was the impact I had on her or just circumstances. But it was the way it was. There was other situations that I had to see. And as you're going through with 8 and 9 here, look through the pages, you'll see that they're giving you a lot of examples of people's ninth step. Right? And they might not all necessarily match up with what you're going to have to address. Right? Talked about this the last session about learning how to access the power of God and how to direct and use that power. Right? Well, what a great place to do that here in the ninth, in 8 and 9. Right? Time after situation after situation where I need to access more power than what I have. Right? And I didn't necessarily feel that from the first ones I'd done. But when I got down to the last ones, the ones that I knew that I absolutely could not do on my own, the ones that I had to pray into to do them, right? Those became opportunities to turn to God for help. And over again, I saw that there was things here that I absolutely was just too afraid to do, right? And God carried me through them anyway, right? And what a great example to have in your life, especially for someone that all along just said, if there's really a God that will work in my life, why doesn't he prove it? And the fact is, I never gave God the opportunity to show me. Now, I'm getting situation after situation where I'm seeing that I'm putting these amends that I'm terrified to confront. She was one that wasn't, that might not be the one that seemed as too scary, but it was more emotionally scary. There was the little incident about me collecting rents for a while. Right? I talked about that briefly, where I'm living in this apartment building, not being able to afford rent, managing the apartment building, collecting rents and depositing them into this constantly regenerating bank account. Nobody, because I was managing it, nobody knew that I was not paying rent. And my job got so important, I started giving myself a little paycheck. It wasn't greedy, but it still wasn't mine. And it was just basically survival mode. I didn't buy big things. I just basically surviving, because the way I was drinking, I, you know, work, especially near the end there, got pretty thin. Right? Practically not, pretty much non-existent. Although I did a lot of plumbing. I fixed people's plumbing whether they needed it or not. Right? And it all had to do with how I was paying myself. So, you know, it sounds, not meaning that to sound like I was doing work. It's just that if I fixed some plumbing, then I could, I was paying somebody else to do it, cashing the check and keeping the money. Right? So, the people's plumbing was probably in better condition than it needed to be. Right? And but in my delusion, I validated and all that. Like, it was okay to do it because I was doing something. And the fact is, the deeper I got into it, the less I had to validate it, and the more I was just cutting checks. Right? Well, it's a long story. It was caught up in a probate. It was supposed to be my mother's, but because my mother was supposed to get everything my grandmother was supposed to get, but my mother passed away first, so everything reverted to my grandmother. So my grandmother owned everything, and so it was my grandmother, technically, that I was stealing from at the time. But by the time I got into the ninth step, she had passed away, and the whole thing was tied up in probate. And as I got down to the card that was for my grandmother, what came to me was that I needed to go to do a graveside amends. And what that looked like was interesting. I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. Right? What could possibly happen here? What I tell people I work with is just to do it exactly how you would if they were there. You get your card. Some people like writing letters, but I didn't necessarily find that necessary, but you can if you like to write letters. Again, you pray about it, and you see what feels like the right way to do that. I sat at the gravesite quietly for a few minutes in meditation. Forgot if it was 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then I prayed, and I asked God to guide the experience. Sitting at the foot of the grave, there was actually three graves there. There was my grandmother, my mother, and my grandfather. Again, I started with the easiest one first, and that was my grandfather, because not too much was going on there. It was more like what I did to my grandmother, that stuff. And then the next was my mother, and then my grandmother. But I sat at the foot of the graves, and I'm just going to talk about the experience with my grandmother right now. Sat quietly in meditation, prayed, asked God to guide the experience, and then I just started talking, just like I would if she was there. I'm in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through a process, and one of the steps in that process was where I had to reflect on my past behavior that I find objectionable and to look, see where I caused harm. And this is the harm that came up and what I have done. And I listed everything that I had marked down in my card out loud, just at the gravesite. And I sat quietly and I asked, I says, is there anything that I'm not seeing here? Anything that I need to see that I'm not seeing here? And I just got quiet. And nothing came, so I thought, oh, no big deal, this is going to be easy. And then I asked that question. What could I possibly do to set right the wrongs that I've caused? Right. And then I got quiet and just listened. And what came back was that there's nothing that I could possibly do that could straighten it out with her at this point, and that who was really harmed at this point was my brothers, who were the beneficiary of the estate, who lost out because of my actions and my financial activity. The stealing, okay. It's hard to get that out. And that maybe I should go to them about this stuff, not her. Believe me, that didn't come from me. Right? It didn't come from me, because I certainly didn't want to hear that. Right? So it just so happened that I hadn't gone to my brothers yet, and one of those was particularly hard because this was a case where years ago people in my home group, they weren't sitting with people they were working with and going through the cards and pulling out the things that'll cause more harm. And this was one of those cases that I wished I never brought up again, because it turned out that it did involve somebody else, and it did cause more. It caused some harm by bringing it up. And that was when we were teenagers. I was doing drugs, and with his girlfriend, and we ended up getting intimate. And she told my cousin, and my cousin told him, and it turned into this big thing, and I denied it. But I never believed that he believed me. Right? And there was always this distance that I felt with him, and I thought that, you know, that maybe that was him not letting go of the situation. And that was what I went to him with. And he acted shocked. And I was like, ouch. You know, and I see looking over the situation that I'd wished I had someone that I bounced that off of that would have questioned the value of going to this person and bringing this back up. Because I'm sure it caused pain. I mean, he had gotten married to somebody else, and he had like half a dozen kids, all women, all girls. He kept trying to get a boy. Finally, his wife said enough. And anyway, but still, it caused harm. And And I talked about the financial stuff, and you know, I laid it all out, how I'd been living, but the thing was is that with that, what had happened with the probate was that it turned out that there was a will contest, not between my brothers, but between uncles that decided that that they should have a piece of this, even though they all knew that it was my mother's building, and their mother only acquired it because everything was supposed to go to my mother, but it went backwards when my mother passed away first. Anyway, I learned that money's thicker than blood, which is sad, but well, that's another amends I can talk about. But what had happened was is the will contest flipped everything around where we got nothing. That's how greedy my uncles were. And I became like the figurehead of this fight. Everybody was, I was like the good cop, bad cop thing. And well, Dan was the bad guy here and the one keeping everything going. And I flipped it all around where they were the ones that ended up with very little and we ended up with the bulk of it. And then, whereas they had flipped it around the other way. Anyway, I turned the whole thing around. And there wasn't that much money. The building was purchased in 72, so property was a lot cheaper then, so it's not an impressive amount of money, but it was in a decent area. And anyway, the point was is by the time I went to him to make these amends, I had done so much for the family in this probate thing and flipped the whole thing around. He said, look at all this stuff that you've done. All right, I think we're even. All right. And so, again, this was something I was terrified with. This was one of the last amends that I made. Confronting him with this thing, I figured I'd be paying this thing to him forever, paying him back money forever. And so it caused a lot of fear. And you know, these things never seem to be as scary as I anticipate going in. Right? And then there was that, all the people that we had were in this will contest with. Used to have a close family. My grandmother, everybody would come over to my grandmother's house for holidays, and everybody, there'd be like a whole bunch of us, and that all just kind of, when my grandmother passed away and my mother passed away, it just all kind of ended. And but we had somewhat of a close family until this probate thing came about, and it got kind of ugly. And you know, and I really believe that we were a victim of their greed, that they didn't really have any of this coming. There's a part in the book in page 77 where it says it's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. Right? These people were definitely my enemies at this point. Right? I looked at them as people that cared more about money and greed than what was right. And I couldn't see how I did anything but protect myself by going through the legal channels to do the things that one would do to stand up for themselves, instead of just saying, oh, they want my money, I'll roll over and let them take it, right? And that's not what happened. You know, sometimes the most spiritual thing to do is ask for enough power to get done what has to get done, right? It's not always about accepting everything, right? Some things are not acceptable, and I need enough power to get through them and do what has to be done. So how do you go to somebody, make amends, when you really believe they did more to you than you did to them, right? So reading through the book here, actually, with somebody I was working with, we got to this point, and I'm reading it, And it's funny how sometimes when you're helping somebody else with it, how the things that you need just kind of pop out and just are there. And I really related to it being harder to go to these people than to a friend. It says, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Now, this is a guy that I told him I was going to dig him up after he dies, after I've pissed on his grave for a few months and just leave him out on the ground. Okay, I might have been overreacting a little bit, but I wasn't. How do I go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit? Right. Well, it doesn't say that I have to be helpful and forgiving. It says I go to him in that spirit. Right? There's a difference between forgiving him, right, and going to him with a forgiving spirit. Ultimately, what I saw happen was when I went to him in that helpful and forgiving spirit, and we discussed what we needed to discuss, I walked away free of that situation. And there was some forgiveness attached to that. It just took a little bit more time. It says, we go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. Right? So I was able to go to him, actually a few of my relatives, express our past ill feelings, and I could honestly say that I regret that happened to our family, because we had such a close family at one time, and that the fact that this whole thing would get in the way of it, I regretted that this thing got in the way of what we had as a family, and I could honestly say that. And it wasn't that I liked it. It wasn't that I'm not taking responsibility here, but I expressed my regret of what happened to our family. Right? And today, I'm actually in real estate. I just sold one of my cousin's condos. Right? So she trusts me with that. My other cousin is my bookkeeper. She takes care of my paperwork. Right? These are the same people that I hated. Right? So relationships were mended. Didn't happen overnight, right? But it started with me taking the first step and going to them with this stuff in this way. My other brother was easy, though, because I've done so much for him over the years. It was almost like nothing. He was, yeah, don't worry about all that. Just stay sober. I know that some people will want to say, no, I can't just forget it. I have to do something. Right? If you go to someone and ask them what they want from you and they tell you, just go with it. As long as it's not unreasonable. I went to somebody with something else, and they were in some other kind of spiritual cult program, whatever you want to call it, and they had their own terminology. When I asked him, what can I do to set right the wrongs that I've caused, his response was, you can kill my enemies. And I says, okay. I didn't know. I didn't, and said a couple other things that I thought was a little out of line, and naturally there's going to be some things that you just can't do. You know, this is not about putting yourself in a position to be abused or used, right? So, trying to think about it. Oh, the big one. wasn't really a big one. It was the last one, though. Now, my home group was... my home group is... They're big on, as I said, finishing amends. And we used to have to park about a block away and walk to the meeting. And my sponsor, for some reason, he always ended up behind me walking to the meeting. And he'd say, well, hey, Dan, what about that last amends? Right? I kept hearing that over and over and over again. And it's, there's only so many excuses you can come up with. Right? And it was actually to the IRS because I kind of forgot about them for about 5 years. Maybe a little longer. No, about 5 years. I was terrified because I thought, I'm new in recovery, just a couple years sober. How could I possibly come up with... I couldn't see how I could possibly come up with the money that I was going to need to get them off my back. And they kept saying, just make the approach. Just make the approach. Right? You can always, make the best deal possible. Right? They're not going to be able to squeeze any more out of you than you have. Right? And it's like, I had this weird feeling that I didn't want them to take my money. Until he said, keep something in mind. It's not your money. You're holding theirs. Right? And finally, it was the last one, and it hung on for a while, and I really wanted to be able to stand up and say, I finished. Right? And it's weird because I was pretty comfortable at that point, and and it just didn't feel as important, right? And I think that's where for me the importance of having a home group that made this stuff important became important because I couldn't just get by in this group by saying, well, that's the one I'm never going to really be able to make. Right. Besides, they're not going to completely forget about me anyway, so it was destined to eventually catch up to me, I thought. So I went out and I finally got someone to help. It was suggested that I don't have to do this alone, get a professional to look over my stuff. So I found an accountant, gave him all my stuff. See, what I failed to realize is that I wasn't working for 5 years. I was doing very little. And I was afraid that I was going to owe all this money. And when they started looking at all my stuff, it was like, I just didn't have an income. Right? I don't know if they could tax you with money you steal from your grandmother, but I don't think that happens. Not even in the United States. Yet. Although there was a death tax. Yeah, that's not true. I guess they do have a way to do that. But still, I didn't have a job, so I wasn't earning a living. And so all that fear that went on for more than a year was for nothing. I spent more time in aid than I needed to be, living in the fear, thinking that I absolutely can't do this. And when I just trusted God and moved forward and did what I really knew that I needed to do, it all worked out fine. Right? So then I was able to finish that off, and I thought, okay, now I'm done. But that wasn't the end of his instructions, because now that I went to my sponsor, Joe, and said, Joe, I finished all of the amends that I'm aware of. He says, okay, now sit with that for a while and pray and ask if there's any amends that came up that you forgot about or since you started making amends, any new harms. And I thought, sheesh, I thought I was finished. And I prayed about it. Nothing came. And I sat with it for like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And there was just absolutely no other amends, no other harms that I'd caused that I needed to address. I had finished everything. And you know, I kind of felt flat. I couldn't really explain it, but the best way that I can explain it is, you know how just before you get the flu, you kind of get a emptiness in your head, like a light feeling? And it wasn't going away. And it had been 3 months by the time I realized something. Because I'd already been thinking, okay, maybe I should go to a doctor, or I don't know what's going on. And it's like, and I realized what was going on. And that is, it wasn't that I was sick, it was that I was quiet. And I was so not used to being in that space. Right? And it talks about, and even talks about that promise of being in a place of perfect peace and ease. Right? And I experienced it from being in that place of, and I believe it was directly in relation to the fact that I had finished all of those amends and that I had gone through that process practicing accessing the power of God and directing and using that power to complete those amends. And you know, I just started talking about my experiences with amends with the last few of them, right? Those last ones were the ones I would have completely missed. Those last ones were the ones that I had to turn to God harder for help with. Right? The last ones were the ones that I completely hit a wall with my, and knew that self-will was not going to be enough to accomplish this. And I saw one right after another that turning to God for more power worked. And I got the proof that I always wanted. I got the proof that I always needed to believe that when I hit a wall with self-will, there's a power that I could tap into that will move me beyond myself. Right? And it was an experience that a lot of people in the program don't see, don't get, because a lot of people don't finish the ninth step. And that's not my message. My message is that of what will happen if you do, right? And I don't believe that some people will say that you can't ever really finish amends because you'll always create new ones, right? But to be in this place, this window of where you see that there's just nothing left to do. I don't know. It's hard to explain. It really is. But it's, you know, but it's like there's this vast inner landscape that sometimes we can just touch. Sometimes in meditation. Sometimes just in the right setting. Right? But to be able to live from that place, right? You know, it's just hard to describe. So I feel like I'm done with 8 and 9 now, so we're going to start the break now. Oh, questions. You know what? I'd rather do questions than start the break. And usually with the ninth step, there tends to be a lot of questions. So that should pretty much fill the time. So go ahead, Dan.
My question is, you're talking about making amends to Lori. And you talked about reviewing the harm that you understood, the harm that you had done to her in your relationship. Later on, you talked about, you used the word regret. You regretted the things that had happened in terms of how it disrupted your family. And on page 81, he says, regarding relationship with a woman, an ex-wife, or whatever it is, we are sorry for what we have done, and God will not be repeated. So I had difficulty with words to use in terms of you're taking responsibility for the harm that you've done. Did you use the word, like, I regret or I am sorry. Are those words that you would include in making amends to a person that you had, to whom you brought harm in a relationship?
Would I use the term sorry or regret in harms that I have caused in a relationship?
You know, I take responsibility, or I recognize that I did you harm, I brought harm to you, and I regret that. I'm sorry about that. Would those be the kinds of words you would use in making amends to an ex or wife?
Each situation, okay, would I use the word regret or that I'm sorry when making amends to an ex-wife? Right? Just repeating it for the microphone. Each situation will be different, which is why we have to practice praying in. And I believe that the practice of praying in is a big part of the experience and learning how to start to trust that what we need to do will come. And sometimes you might use one or the other or both, but at the same time, I don't believe that just saying I'm sorry is necessarily an amends, because it doesn't necessarily mend anything. It's just, as I talked about a little bit before, it's just the word sorry is just to clear the air for some reason, and it doesn't necessarily admit any responsibility or guilt or remorse. Sometimes you could be just sorry you got caught, you know. So I think that it just depends on the specifics around the situation, and that if you pray and it feels like the right thing to do, to say you're sorry, certainly I would go with that. But if I was just going to say I'm sorry, I wouldn't call it an amends. Right? But what you do find is when you're going through a list of people that some of them you didn't really harm, but it requires an I'm sorry just to clear the air. So sometimes we'll make another pile for those, if there's a lot of those, and just say, you just need to call this person and catch up or do whatever and say you're sorry you didn't do this, or right? But you didn't necessarily harm them. Right? So I think that an apology, going to them to say I'm sorry, is not necessarily what it's talking about here in the ninth step. But it could be a part of rebuilding relationships or eliminating guilt or things that are blocking you from God.
So is the part that we really are able to mend what has happened in the past, is that where you're listening to what the other person has to say when you ask them, is there anything I can do to make this right? Is
the part where the amend actually happens is when you're listening to what they have to say or ask them what I can do to make it right?
Yeah, you said saying sorry doesn't mend anything. What part of the process is it in your, do you feel, where you actually can mend